Welcome to Pulse, Monitoring Change in Healthcare, with Paul Rothman, Dean and CEO of Johns Hopkins Medicine. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on the NIH's mandate to establish a website where negative research results will be published. Why would we want to do such a thing?
As you do clinical research, often results that don't suggest a new treatment are important or are essential to treat patients correctly. Negative results can be and often are more important than positive results. To be frank, often studies should be negative. Not every new treatment or new way to diagnose or new paradigms are better than the old ones. The problem is that journals don't publish those in general. Certainly the more prestigious journals don't. And there's a real bias in very prestigious journals to publish positive results, new things. I think to be able to gather the results that don't demonstrate a difference between an old treatment and a new treatment are really important for physicians to learn. So I think it's great.
You shared a story with me before about a colleague of yours, someone who was really informative to you in your career, who talked about, wow, if our research results always proved our hypothesis.
Yeah. So it's Bob Perry is a great scientist who said that I never learn anything from a result that I predicted, which is a great way to think about science. It's often people have hypotheses and they have to prove the hypothesis, but often great science is not like that. It's an unexpected result. It's something that you would never have predicted, and often they tell you really interesting biology that really lead to really interesting new theories.
How easy do you think it's going to be to populate a website with this kind of data so that it can help to inform researchers going forward?
I think there's a lot of it out there, and I think if you establish it in a way that's searchable, I think it's going to be great. I think a lot of people will go to that site and try to see what's there, because in fact it helps you to know. The problem is you don't know if someone's tried something and it hasn't worked, and then you retry it. The truth is if you knew that something didn't work or didn't demonstrate a difference, then you'd have that piece of information. I really think it'd be very informative for scientists and for researchers and clinicians.
Do you think that as people develop grant proposals, it could have a way of almost squelching creativity or otherwise informing them in a negative way?
I think actually you'll get better research grants because people will see that something they're going to propose has already been attempted. And that lets you develop better hypotheses. That really is important information for researchers. So I think it actually will enhance grant proposals and not squelch at all.
Excellent. What does the public need to know about this website? Can the public, do you know, be able to go on there and search?
NIH has had several initiatives to make research accessible to the public, and I think that's great. This site, all NIH sites, anyone can go in. If you want to go in now, you can search any NIH grant and find out what they're doing and see the list of publications from the grant. So I'm sure this site will be similarly established, and I think that's terrific. I think we should all try to make sure the public sees our science.
Well, after all, it is the public that's funding it for the most part, right?
Absolutely.
Since we're talking about public things then, things that will be of public benefit, let's change gears just a little bit to something that's happening on the part of the FDA as well as CMS. And I'd like you to explain for me, what exactly is a biosimilar?
Many of the new drugs that are on the market now are not the old-time prototypical small molecules. Most of the drugs that we grew up with are small molecules. What's happened really over the past 20 years is the production of what we call biological therapeutics. In general, those are antibodies or antibody-like substances that are very useful. They can either bind to a cell surface protein or receptor and stimulate it or inhibit it, or they can take molecules that are in your bloodstream and absorb them out, so protect you against them, such as hormones or cytokines or others. So these antibodies or antibody-like substances are very common now, and they treat everything from arthritis to inflammatory bowel disease to cancer. They have just exploded our ability to treat multiple diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and have been really important new drugs. But they're made very differently. When these things are starting to come off patent or when someone wants to treat in a cheaper way, you try to make what's called a biosimilar, which is something like that antibody. But that antibody is very unique. It's not like a chemical. it's a protein and it's been made in one similar way. So now you're trying to find other proteins that have the same biologic properties as the original antibody or antibody-like drug. So those are biosimilars.
Would you speculate then that this will drive some of these really high prices we see for biologics down?
Well, I think that's why you do biosimilars. Those drugs are expensive to make, much more expensive than a small molecule that we're used to, but the costs are high because of the research required to make that drug. And so the biosimilars will, the same way a generic drug works for a small molecule, these biosimilars will similarly be less expensive, but not as cheap as a generic drug for a small molecule, because making antibodies is more expensive than making small molecules.
You brought us really beautifully to the last thing I'd like you to address this month. The American College of Physicians has just said, hey guys and women, physicians out there, we want you to prescribe generics if a generic exists. What's your thought about that? Is that a good policy?
I think it's, in general, probably a good thing. So what we learn is, in general, generics work as well as non-generic drugs. And they are generally less expensive. So if we are worried about, and we are all worried about healthcare costs and expenditures, then generics should be commonly used. There are occasions that generics don't work as well as a non-generic drug. And so it's not every patient that you could do it with, but most patients, it's fine. And so I think in general, we want to bring down healthcare costs.
And so would you then suggest that in practice, physicians should turn to the generic first, and then if they don't get what they want out of that, maybe turn to a brand name medication?
In general, I think it's often worth trying the generics to see if they're fine. Most times they will be. And some physicians don't like that because a patient has been on a drug for a long time, it's working well, and they don't want to take the risk of switching to a generic form of that same drug. That's a doctor's decision. Again, depending on the severity of the illness, I can understand why sometimes you don't want to do that, but in general, it probably is worth trying a generic.
What do patients need to know about this push toward generics?
I think a lot of it is driven by the copays that patients pay for drugs these days. It can be very expensive, but they have to understand that in general, the generic will work as well as a non-generic, but not always. And so they have to be very cognizant that if they get switched to a generic and something starts to not feel right, that they need to tell their doctor.
Part of that shared decision-making model. Yeah,
that's right. Absolutely. Shared decision-making.
Excellent. Thank you so very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.